This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, Roger, and good morning to you on this Saturday morning with a lot to talk about during our weekly get-together. Max Armstrong will be chiming in. He survived the flooding and the hurricane in North Carolina. Wasn't near a big river, so the flooding hasn't impacted him, but it certainly did impact agriculture. But as I mentioned earlier to Matt, we're going to talk to a dairy farmer who milks cows in the middle of a city in near Phoenix, Arizona. And he's going to start milking sheep in addition to milking cows. And then Max will join us a little bit later to talk markets with Naomi Bloom of Stewart Peterson up in West Bend, Wisconsin. And he will introduce the Pig Farmer of the Year who was announced this week. So a lot to do, a lot to talk about, and of course, a couple more weeks of visits with Jim Fazell, and then the growing season is over. Stay with us. We'll be back with Jim when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. It's Jim Fazell time here on the Saturday Morning Show. Not too many more Saturday visits with Jim, but we do have some cleanup to do and some things to talk about now that we're into the fall season. So, good morning, Jim.
Well, good morning, Orion. Good to be with you today.
And today we're going to talk about bugs.
Yeah, we are. You know, the bugs in the garden are pretty well done, but there are a lot of things that are trying to spend the winter with us. They want to move indoors where it's comfortable like we do. And we need to talk a little bit about that, things like the ants and the box elder bugs and ladybugs and even spiders and millipedes and possibly wasps are all going to try to get indoors to escape the weather. Two kinds of bugs that we need to be concerned with right now. Some places where box elder bugs are just prolific as can be, and other places where there are none of them. Now, a box elder bug is a black bug about 3/4 of an inch long with a red diamond on its back, and they feed in box elder trees during the summer. In the fall, they begin to look for a place to stay. They'll cluster under rocks or in crevices and stuff on the sides of our houses, and then they can wander indoors as well. Now, these little critters can stack up on the outside of your house in layers deep, thousands of them. And of course, when they do that, they're going to find a crack in the side of the house next to a window or a window that's slightly open, and they're going to move indoors. Fortunately, indoors, they don't bite. They don't eat anything in the house. And what you really need to do is to vacuum them up. Now, you can swat them with a fly swatter, but you'll be sorry because they leave a smudge on the wall, which is very difficult to get off. So vacuum them up indoors or just ignore them. Now, incidentally, when they come indoors and you'll see them walking around, crawling around, and all of a sudden, even though you haven't done anything about it, they disappear. Well, they didn't go outdoors. They've hidden someplace in your house where they're going to spend the winter, and you won't see them again until a nice warm day when the sun is shining. Maybe in February, you're going to see them wandering around again looking for a place to get out. But they've been indoors with you the whole time. Outdoors, you can control them on the side of the house with insecticidal soap that you can get at any garden center. And you spray the outer layer of these creatures out there. They'll dry up and fall off, and then you spray the next layer until eventually they're gone. So you can control them. Now, another one that's a bug, actually is not a bug, it's a beetle, it's the ladybug. And these are the ones that we sing about in the poetry and the song and so forth. Four types of them live around here. The spotted one, which is small with nine red spots, red with nine black spots on it. The convergent, which is the familiar one that we've seen forever around here. Twice stabbed is a little black bug that has two red spots on it, and it is a beneficial predator of cottony maple scale, which was really prolific around here for many years. And these things have kept it pretty well under control. But the one we're mostly concerned with getting indoors is the Asian multicolored ladybug, which is a large bug, can be yellow, tan, red, orange in color, with spots all over the back of it. This was imported some years ago by the USDA for a biological control of corn aphids and almond aphids. It's done its job. Now it's leaving the cornfields and the almond trees and looking for places to stay in the wintertime. They too will cluster on the sides of buildings in the sunny side, which is just like where they come, where they do in nature, where they come from, which is China and Japan. They'll cluster on the sunny sides of cliffs and bluffs and so forth. They can get indoors because sometimes we don't have the house as tight as we'd like it. Fortunately, they don't bite indoors, but they may pinch, which means that they're taking a pinch on you just to see if you're worth eating. Of course, we aren't. But anyway, indoors, they don't eat anything, and they are actually beneficial, so you don't want to kill them if you can help it. Just sweep them up and put them outside. Now, here's another case where you don't want to smack these things indoors with a fly swatter because they produce an undesirable, to say the least, fragrance. And, of course, they make a smudge on the wall. Now, the things that we more commonly see around here are the ants and the spiders and the millipedes. And, of course, they get in through the cracks and the gaps and so forth. Indoors, the ants and millipedes won't bite. Millipedes actually don't really hurt anything indoors, though they're kind of disgusting looking. The ants will look for a food source. They're going to look for sugars, sweets, or fats and so forth. So they'll take up permanent residence in the house, and they do eat indoors. Spiders will get in various ways, sometimes when they're very, very tiny, and they may even have been living there for a while before you even notice them. Spiders will bite. You don't want to handle them. A number of years ago, my friend Phil Nixon, our entomologist down at the University of Illinois, told me these little greenhouse spiders that get up in the corner of by the ceilings won't bite. So I had one. I wanted to look at it, had it in the palm of my hand with my magnifying glass looking to get a good... It bit me. And Phil said that either they don't bite or the bite feels like a mosquito bite. Well, this felt like a bee sting, so I didn't want to play with these things. Incidentally, another way that you can get problems with spiders is in clothing that hasn't been used for quite a while. Hanging in your closet, even, they could get in the sleeves, and if you put your arm through the sleeves, they'll give you a bite because they think you're trying to destroy them, which you actually are. Anyway, these critters indoors, you need to vacuum up if you can, and you can actually keep some of them under control with some insecticides or baits that we'll talk about in a second.
Bees, wasps, and hornets. A lot of people asking about that problem.
Yeah, that's a fact. You know, the bees can get into the attic and they'll build nests up there, hives up there. Honeybees can do that, and of course that's bad because the honey will drip down through the ceiling. So you need to get them out of there. Most of the time you can get a beekeeper to come in and collect them because they're valuable. Honeybees, bumblebees, and carpenter bees will come in, and they will normally be in wall voids or up in the ceiling, so in the upper part of the house or in the wall voids in the basement and so forth. Not a lot of problem with them. Wasps are a different story because they sting. They can be aggressive, particularly the yellow jackets. Yellow jackets will get into wall voids. They'll get underground and so forth around your house, and they will get into the house. Now, if they get into the house, they're there by accident, but that doesn't mean they're not going to sting, and they can. So those you need to do something about, and the way to do that is to keep the house sound so they can't get through the wall voids and small openings. And if you see one come in through the house, into the house through an open door, you need to get it out as fast as possible. There, if you hit them with a fly swatter, you don't make a mess and so forth, and you can just pick them up with a Kleenex and get rid of them. Keeping bugs out. You need to remove the mulch and vegetation around the base of your house a foot or so and spray that area with insecticide like 7-er, permethrin, ortho, bug be gone, max, and so forth to keep the bugs from getting across that. Repair all the doors and windows so they fit tightly. Caulk around the cracks in the foundation, seams around the windows, and so forth. And indoors you can use baits. Boric acid works very well. And ready-to-use aerosols if you see something you want to get rid of. Practice good sanitation, pick up all the crumbs and so forth. Store paper goods, by the way, which are attractive to things which are the silverfish, which we haven't even really talked about. But keep all these things clean and keep them where you can keep track of them. If you see any insects around them, you need to do something about that. Finally, I just want to mention mosquitoes. There are a lot of them out right now. They're biting during the middle of the day. They carry West Nile virus. Breed in small amounts of water, so empty all the containers and use insect repellent when you're outdoors. You don't want to get a bite from one of these mosquitoes that's carrying a disease. Wear long sleeves and hats and so forth, and enjoy the outside, but protect yourself.
Indeed, enjoy it, and we enjoy you, and we'll have a couple more Saturday morning visits, so we look forward to talking to Jim Fazell next week here on the Saturday Morning Show. Several years ago, we visited a farm in Glendale, Arizona, part of the suburban area of Phoenix in the Valley of the Sun, and we found Paul Rovey, who in the city is milking 2,000 Jersey cows and doing a lot of other things. And 5 years later, you're still here.
Absolutely. We're still in the city, and in fact, the city's continuing to grow around us. But we work hard at being good neighbors with our city neighbors. We make sure that we do all the right things, keeping the flies down, try to minimize the smell, haul the manure real regularly. We do everything we can to be good neighbors so that we don't get complaints from our neighbors.
Apparently, it's working, and you were talking about a product that you can kill the odor.
We have a product that's a neighbor of ours has developed a biological product that we put into the water. We buy it from him, and we put it into our water that goes out to our effluent nutrient lagoons, and it just eliminates the odor of the water. There's no odor there, so it works really well.
So let's talk economics, Paul, because we've talked about tough times for cattle producers and hog producers, and a dairy farmer called me a couple of weeks ago and said, hey, you're not talking about dairying. Is it a challenging business at the moment?
It's really challenging. It's looked up just a little bit from the really dark times back a couple of months ago during the summer. It was really, really, really tough. And, it's been really a struggle because the world price is down, and we are basically in the world market. We're competitive with the world market. And so that's really the bright side of it, is that we're competitive with the world market. So as that market loosens up, and it's going to, because there's not all the other programs out in the world to help create more milk. So as that loosens up, we will be able to take advantage of any increases that happen in that market. While I don't see any of those coming in the real near future, I think in the long run, we're going to be well suited to be able to take advantage of the dairy markets in the export market, and then that'll be reflected also in our domestic market as well.
Besides operating a dairy farm, you're very involved in the industry, chairman of DMI. And as we look at the past several years, concerns over a drop in fluid milk consumption and introducing new products and making relationships with the NFL, how are all these working?
You've mentioned a number of different programs. I'm going to kind of focus initially on the fluid. We do have some fluid relationships with a number of really good companies across the country. While it's not going to turn on a dime, it's not going to turn around fluid consumption tomorrow, it's making significant headway. A number of the companies are having some really good results from those things, from the sale and the uniqueness of their products and marketing them and advertising them and all the different ways that they're moving them. And there's a whole lot more that are still yet to reach the pipeline. So as they continue to roll out, I think I have a real conviction that fluid is going to be, while it's not going to just take off like a rocket, we are going to see a solid market in our fluid. And I think we will have a real strong market there. And so that's the fluid side. Then you mentioned the NFL, and that is working extremely well with the buy-in from the schools and the excitement that it creates with the students about exercise and nutrition, and combining the two and getting the whole school involved in those programs and increasing the amount of dairy that those schools consume. It's a tremendous opportunity for us to not only increase dairy, but to do a really good thing for the communities, for the students, for the schools, all the above. It makes it a great program with the excitement of the NFL, the nutrition from dairy, and the combination of the exercise. It's a fantastic program.
But now let's talk about a different kind of cheese, because you're going into a new venture. What are you going to do?
Actually, I'm going to start milking sheep. I've been raising sheep for the last 6 or 7 years, and I realized that, you know what, I can milk these sheep. We had some of the right kind. We got more of the right kind of milking sheep. And so now we're going to continue to create that herd. And within 6 months from now, we should be milking sheep. We have to just build our barn. We've got our corrals mostly built. And so we're going to milk the sheep and then start start creating cheese. And so sheep cheese is not cheap cheese.
I like that line. So you will be adding another wing to the farm, but it will be sheep. Is there a milking machine for sheep?
Yes, it is a milking machine for sheep. It's the same one that they use for goats. And the goat industry has really taken off. It's really prevailed well across the country. But there's not a lot of people that are milking sheep, and this is going to be an opportunity I see that we'll have a good market that will be, you know, being in the city, I am sitting in the metropolitan area of about 5.5 million people. So I have a market here that can be in the restaurants and in boutique delis and those things where I could market this cheese and have it be a profitable venture for us on milk and sheep.
One of my favorite people in the dairy industry, Paul Roby of the Roby Dairy in Glendale, Arizona, in the heart of the city, because his family got there a long time ago before there was a city. And from his dairy barn, you can see the arena where the Arizona Cardinals play football, surrounded by city with his 2,000 Jersey cows. Our thanks to Paul for spending time. I know some of you saw him at World Dairy Expo a week ago because he was there. He's all over the place when it comes to promoting and talking dairy. A quick mention and a hello and a good morning to people at the Stone Eagle restaurant in Rockford last night who came up to say hello, and they listen on WGN. Jimmy Vitale, who created and runs the Stone Eagle restaurant, celebrated his 40th year in the restaurant business this year. So Paul and Joan Wallum, my good friends, and Gloria and I were there last night to pay tribute to 40 years of serving good food and doing it with a great deal of fun. And so to Jimmy this morning, we say good morning. He's still a kid because last night he was showing off the new train that he has installed in the ceiling of the Stone Eagle Bar. And it actually runs. Doesn't deliver drinks, but it actually runs. So good evening last night. It's 55 degrees at our Huntley, Illinois studios at 25 minutes before 6 o'clock. And we say welcome to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. Today I'll be responding to a listener who started his email, "We're falling apart out here." But first of all, I am delighted to be on the air for Wink Products Company. I've lost track of the decades I've been on the air on behalf of Wink Products Company. It's one of the Midwest success stories. Wink is a family-owned corporation in rural Eldora, Iowa. It has manufactured specialty cleaning products since 1947. And today, Wink is a nationally recognized brand because Wink products work. Wink manufactures professional strength household cleaners and drain openers for you. So learn about all of the Wink products at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. We are falling apart out here, and nobody is doing anything about it. Nobody is even talking about it. That was the opening line of a rather lengthy email from a Midwest farmer a few days ago, who then went on to talk about his concern for the deterioration of the infrastructure in rural America. He was talking about roads and bridges. He said, "Whatever happened to these farm-to-market roads that are to be supported by tax dollars?" He said those states that have tax dollars to do that find the state legislature borrowing from the fund to carry out their pet projects. And meanwhile, more rural bridges are closed for safety reasons, and the deterioration of roads in rural America continues unabated. And then he said, "I haven't heard you talk lately about the waterway system, the deteriorating locks and dams on the Mississippi and the Illinois that are now nearly a century old and continue to fall apart. And we continue to see closings of various locks and dams because of their condition." He said, "What is happening there?" And I guess the answer would be nothing. Oh, Congress does approve programs to begin work on the locks and dams on the waterway system. They approve the program, but they don't appropriate the money. And so nothing gets done. And we're going to watch a transportation system in rural America, I'm afraid, continue to decline. At the same time that they're widening the Panama Canal so that we can move product, particularly agricultural products, out of the Gulf and into Asia much easier than before. But talk continues on Capitol Hill, not much anymore, but the money just isn't coming because there are so many other programs in need of that tax dollar. But I'm with you, sir. I am concerned about what's happening to the transportation infrastructure of the United States. And pretty soon we've got to quit talking and start doing. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks at 21 minutes before 6 o'clock. Max standing by to talk markets with Naomi Bloom of Stewart Peterson, headquartered in West Bend, Wisconsin, when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
Naomi Bloom from Stewart Peterson joining us here this week after a crop report, the USDA October report, a much-anticipated report, a somewhat feared report, it seemed. There was some angst going into this one, wasn't there, Naomi?
Very much so. I think the biggest fear was how big the USDA could make the soybean yield, primarily just because we've been hearing how tremendous the yields are from clients throughout the country. So the market was anticipating the worst, I think. But the surprise, sort of, was that everything came in just as expected, with yields coming in exactly at the USDA averages, and ending stocks coming in, well, big, but maybe not quite as large as what some were thinking. So the market just continues to consolidate and trade sideways on this news. But there's still potentially more to come because with the I just get a little nervous that soybean yield number may even be bigger, because the smallest yield I've heard was 42 in South Dakota, where that was like a record for this particular farmer. It's just tremendous. Most of the yields out there, 60s, 70s. It's a great crop.
There really have been some big numbers thrown around, I know. On the corn yield for a moment, that number was revised downward by about a bushel an acre, as I recall, very much as anticipated, as you pointed out, by the trade. What is impressive to me, though, is what they did with Iowa and Illinois, how they raised those. Each state, I believe, went up 2 bushels an acre. The Illinois number is 202. Now, for those of us with a little snow on the mountain, recalling how it wasn't that long ago that we had 100 bushel corn we were talking about, and here is a statewide average of 202 bushels to the acre. That means there are some farms that have had some huge corn yields.
Yeah, and when we are talking with clients, they're consistently saying the yield is good, not quite as good as last year, but it's still really good. And when I think about on Twitter, the whole no yield tweet thing, if it was bad out there, they would be telling us how bad it is. And so part of my thought is that because they're silent, it really might be better than what they were thinking. So that 202 number, though, yeah, that's phenomenal. Just amazing producers doing their best. And then, maybe that weather this summer wasn't quite as hot as what some were thinking at night, and the crop made it through.
We heard after those crop tours in August, there was so much chatter about tip back and ears not filled to the end. Maybe that wasn't the case so much in Iowa and Illinois, but we did see numbers revised downward, I believe, for the states of Ohio, Michigan, Indiana, maybe Nebraska.
Yeah, so there's definitely those states that were affected primarily the most. And when I think back about the summer, those were the clients who were expressing the tip back the most. So it makes sense that the yields were reduced in those areas. Going forward, I would think that the USDA brings that corn yield number down just a little bit more as more is harvested. But I don't know if we're going to be able to get it below 170 bushels anymore. That was kind of the line in the sand. So that's something to be mindful of. Otherwise, we might just see corn continue to be stuck in that sideways range for a little while longer.
Yeah, what is your price expectation now? I mean, we're not going to see much potential for an increase in price the way you see it?
I would agree with that. It would take now something dramatically bad to happen in South America. But there's already talk that there's going to be less corn yield next year in the United States and more soybean acres. So I would say for price direction in the short term, December corn maybe would go down and touch the 325 area, but resistance continues to be at 350. If we can get some sort of news to spur us higher, then in a heartbeat, I think the market can get up to 375, but then we'll be met with a lot of producer selling. So 325 at the downside, at the best 375 for December futures, looking at the next maybe 2 months. And then we'll just see what South America does after that.
What is your view of what has been happening in terms of our exports of corn and beans? They haven't been too shabby, have they?
That's a great point. They're phenomenal. And even this week, corn had a little export to unknown. So I think that's my opinion, China coming in and doing some buying because they continue to auction off that horrible corn and their internal end users don't want to buy it. So if we can see China doing more and more corn imports, that would be a really big factor in the marketplace that could drive prices higher, because that would be a very big indication that they actually have to eat crow and say, yeah, it is bad corn. And in which case the world ending stocks would be cut dramatically because they would have to write it off or somehow destroy it. So in the meantime, the exports have been good. And with soybeans and corn, of course, this is our harvest time and we're the only game in town until South America comes on board later on. So we should see exports strong this time of year. That's normal. And then we have to keep an eye on the dollar because that's been moving a little higher again, almost near the highs from a year ago. So, but they've been good right now, the exports. That's a really good thing, and that low prices have really spurred and made that demand stronger.
Just to take us back a little bit on those stocks of corn within China, they've had that corn in storage for a few seasons now, correct?
Yeah, 2012, I believe, even some from 2011. So, I mean, it is just, you would think, not good at all. And so they have half of the world's ending stocks of corn. And so, I mean, just step back and think about if most of that is unusable, that is a kind of almost sort of a black swan situation where all of a sudden world-ending stocks are cut in half. So corn, in the bigger picture, I think has some potential to rally here, but we have to watch global news more than U.S. news to make that happen.
You use the term black swan. For folks who may be listening to us who aren't familiar with the market terminology, what does it mean?
It means, holy cow, what just happened out of left field? So this is the big surprise in the market. Like this past year, the big surprise was Brexit, and that spooked all of the bigger money in the marketplace, and the market started to work lower because the big money left and took their ball and went home. So now sometimes a black swan could be weather. It could be something political. A lot of times it's financial and political in nature. But always try to anticipate what could be the black swan this year so you're prepared for it and know how the market would react to help you then do a better job with your marketing.
The pace of harvest. Talk about this pace of harvest and how you see it going. Is it lagging anywhere significantly? We're pretty close to being on a normal pace, are we not?
We are really right on the 10-year average for both corn and beans. Behind last year's pace, definitely. But when you step back, we're right on the average. Beans were 44% harvested this week. Corn was right on its 10-year pace. It has been delayed because it just keeps raining every other day all over the Midwest, especially Minnesota, Wisconsin, parts of Illinois. But so far it's on time.
Good to see you again. Thanks for coming by our studio. We appreciate it, Naomi.
Thanks so much for having me.
Naomi Bloom with Stuart Peterson.
The world of agriculture is never dull. It's always going and moving and keeping Max and me on the go. As a matter of fact, Max, share with us the event that involved some of your time this week.
Orion, I believe this is the second year for the program where they honor the Pig Farmer of the Year, the National Pork Board program. And the other day here in Chicago, it was my privilege to help in handling that announcement at a Facebook Live posting. The Pig Farmer of the Year for 2016, Brad Greenway from Mitchell, South Dakota. As we were getting ready to record the visit, Brad pointed out to me that it should be a family honor. Not just for he himself, but also his wife and partner in the operation, Peggy Greenway, and the entire family, as a matter of fact.
You know, that's exactly right. And when I talked about the award or applying for the award, I wanted it to be, you know, more about the farm and what so many people around the country are doing. And because it is, it's a family farm every day. Like when I'm here today, I mean, my wife is in the barn this morning, and we've got an employee that's out, you know, getting, you know, taking care of the cattle, and then we're starting in the field. And so it truly is a family farm. My dad is 84, so he's got his operation, but, you know, we're working together, you know, on the crop side, helping each other that way. And so it's good to see him still back out in the machinery and keep him going each day. So it really is a family farm. It's been that way. My grandpa and grandma come over from England. The farm that my dad is on is where they settled in, and we're just a mile from that. So I haven't gone very far in my life, about 1 mile, but I'm very proud of that.
You mentioned back home, there's the work that is continuing, and yours is a rather diverse farm. It isn't just pigs that you produce, but you have a cattle operation there. You have corn, soybeans,
wheat,
alfalfa.
Yep, wheat and alfalfa. So we do. And it, again, to me, I mean, in South Dakota, in our area, you know, we've got a lot of pasture land that's not farmable. And so the cattle enterprise works very well. The corn and soybeans, of course, all our corn goes back in and feeds my pigs and the cows. And then, you know, I have just about enough fertilizer to fertilize all my corn ground. And so it's really just a nice mix. And I think, you know, we talk about sustainability. You know, that's kind of a buzzword now. And to me, I think being sustainable going forward is to be able to capture on all those things, doing it right, but at the same time, you know, using that, all those things to make a farm sustainable into the future.
Concern about the people, the pigs, the planet. I hear that talked about for those of you who have been involved in what is called the We Care initiative in the America's pork industry. Talk a little bit about that. What really matters to you?
You know, that and when the National Pork Board come up with the new strategic plan, and that's what it all is about: people, pigs, and planet. And I think farmers are living that every day. When we talk about the people, it's, you know, it's having safe food. It's not like consumers, but it's about our workforce and our employees that we have. When we talk about the pigs, obviously, it's, you know, are they well cared for? Are they taken care? And again, comes down to safe food as they go my farm. I'm pretty proud that when a pig leaves my farm, it's going right to some consumer's plate. And then the planet, you know, that's the environment. And again, we've got to take care of the land that we're on every day. And so I just think it was a great strategic plan. I think it's what farmers probably live every day. They maybe don't know that, but they are. They're taking care of all three things that are so important to whether it's a consumer or the next generation coming forward, to take care of all three of those: pigs, planet, and people.
As far as the pigs are concerned and their health and your care of them, how does that work? Point out some of the things that you stress on your particular farm out in your pig barns to really provide the care that is needed.
You know, one thing, and sometimes when you mention how many pigs, and I would consider ourselves, we're probably a small to mid-size as far as number of animals sold. But when you go talk to consumer audiences or civic groups and you tell them, or they ask how many pigs you sell and how do you take care of them, and I'm very proud of the fact that the technology that we've implemented, you know, before I'm not carrying feed and I'm not scooping the manure like I used to. All that stuff is automated. And so the technology, but what it does is allows me and our family to be able to just be in the barn observing the pigs and making sure. And so when we walk the pens, we get in there, we walk the pigs' pens, and you know, we're observing the pigs. And if something needs to be treated, we sort them off and making sure they got fresh feed and water. And so we literally can spend more time looking at the pigs and taking care of their needs and not doing all the other stuff, because technology takes care of that for us.
That's the Pig Farmer of the Year, introduced by Max Armstrong here in Chicago earlier this week. That's Brad Greenway of Mitchell, South Dakota. Mitchell, of course, home of the famous Corn Palace, the building that's built out of ears of corn. Well, we're at 3 minutes before 6 o'clock news time. That gives me time to talk about next week. I am truly excited about heading to Indianapolis next week and sitting at the anchor desk to provide gavel-to-gavel coverage on RFD-TV of the National FFA Convention. That will continue through late Saturday afternoon when they select the new national officer team. But between Wednesday and Saturday, thousands of dollars in scholarships and awards will be presented, and there will probably be 50 or 52,000 FFA members, another 10,000 adults who are members of the FFA alumni or teachers or superintendents or corporate executives with companies beyond agriculture that are looking for bright young leadership. They'll find it at the FFA convention next week. If you can't be there in person, hope you'll join us for our coverage, and Been a lot of changes in FFA over the years, but here's one for you. Back in the 1992-93 academic year, 26% of the FFA members were female. Today, 44% of the FFA members are female, as more and more ladies are going into the more than 300 career opportunities offered in the world of agriculture and agribusiness. A comment or two on the markets that reacted really quite well to the October crop report that continued to show record production out there if we get it harvested. And yesterday we saw the December wheat contract up 4.5, December corn up 4, and November soybeans up 6.5. And yesterday at the Mercantile Exchange, finally got a little bit of a bounce in the cattle market. That market has been hurting badly the past several months, but the October live cattle contract was up $1.50 yesterday, and the October feeder cattle contract was up 65 cents a hundredweight. So maybe we'll continue to get a bounce, but if we get good weather, we're going to continue to put this record corn and soybean crop in the bin. So next week, in addition to the National FFA Convention, Sunbelt Expo, probably the last of the big outdoor farm equipment shows, gets underway on Tuesday. It's a three-day event through Thursday, and it takes place in Moultrie, Georgia. It's a good show for the southern part of the country. I've been there a few times and have always enjoyed it. We always enjoy your company. I enjoy the help of Bob Ferguson, whose engineering talent is the glue that keeps this program together. And thanks to all of you for joining us here on the Saturday morning show.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.